And it sounds like they're building a lot of trust and using some skills related to emotional intelligence, which I'll get to tell you guys about. And I see how we fit. It's interesting how you look at things and think, how do you fit in this? So today I'm going to talk about the relationship between emotional intelligence among supervisors and conditions of trust among staff at our Kentucky Department for Public Health. And it's me along with a whole slew of people, and one of those is actually in the room today. One of my committee members, Dr. William Mace, is here celebrating with me. And so he can help answer questions as well later. And I have no relationships to disclose. So, a little bit about why and how did I get into this. As many of you probably know, our number 8 of the essential public health services, the 10 that we have, are to assure a competent public and personal health care workforce. It also fits nicely into the domains of public health practice. There are 8 of those, one of those being leadership and systems thinking. And as she was talking about the learning organization, that fits right in with systems thinking. And the other piece, which hopefully you guys are well aware, is the IOM report, The Future of the Public's Health in the 21st Century. And when I've asked a lot of people about if they've ever heard of this report, they kind of look at me like, what? But hopefully you in the room have maybe heard. And one of those pieces is that federal, state, and many other public health agencies should really prioritize leadership training, support, and development. One of the challenges in that, and we'll talk about this maybe later with questions, are how do you fund that? What does that look like? It's always the basis. But where's the money to actually do that leadership? So the logic model that I use, this is thanks to Dr. Doug Schuchfield and colleagues with some of his research with public health systems and services research. And you can see how this is kind of how this fit. And I want to highlight the macro context for one, because that is where really a lot of the health equity pieces come into this and the social justice that have an impact on all of what's going on. Where my particular research looked at was the capacity level, the inputs, the staff, and the leadership there. But as you can see, the health equity has an impact on those, and eventually there's a real relationship to community health outcomes. So it's all very interrelated, and it's really important, even though it may not directly link right to those health outcomes. They all fit together. So a little bit about emotional intelligence, and you know, I've had some mixed thoughts about, okay, what is emotional intelligence? What does that look like? And sometimes people think it's just that feely stuff, but it's not really all that. So as you can see, it's really the ability to improvise, to adapt and overcome. It helps us understand and participate more consciously in what we feel and how we respond rather than just reacting. It's about understanding and using emotions. And it helps with having more effective relationships, more effective customer service, being a more effective team member, and a more effective leader. Is that important in public health? Maybe, a little. And so leadership and emotional intelligence are very related, and oftentimes a high level of emotional intelligence also is a high level of participative management, putting people at ease, self-awareness. And the like. There's so many pieces and parts. Building and mending relationships, doing what it takes, and change management. So as I, you know, hear Lisa talking, a lot of what they're going through requires a high amount of emotional intelligence from a lot of leadership to move forward successfully in this process. So trust, what is trust? And actually, it was really interesting. One of the questions I had for my committee that I thought, well, doesn't everybody know what trust is? How do you define trust? Well, it is kind of a tricky thing to define, but essentially, it's the willingness of somebody to say, all right, I'm going to be vulnerable to you based on the fact that you're probably going to act in a way that's positive, but I can't control you. So that's essentially trust. Stephen Covey, one of my favorite authors and mentors, if you will, trust is the highest form of motivation. It brings out the very best in people. And some of my research found that trust in a specific person is actually more predictive than just being a trusting person. And the level of trust is required to be higher when the risk is higher. Makes sense. And it's enhanced when leaders model behavior leading to trust, win-win outcomes. And then there's evidence that trust does lead to improved performance. Again, something important from a public health perspective and from any perspective. If we want to have improved performance, then we have potentially improved employees and improved health outcomes, hopefully, and more health equity. So all related. So here's what I did. I did a study looking at that relationship between the emotional intelligence and the trust within the Department of Public Health. I pilot tested this with the commissioner and division directors. And then I did a full study with the branch managers and the staff who report to them. The surveys that I used were already developed. I used the Baran EQI, Emotional Quotient Inventory, for the supervisors. And then I used a conditions of trust tool that was developed by Dr. John Butler based on the leader-member exchange theory. And I developed that. It was a paper survey, but I utilized a program called REDCap, electronic survey tool, that was developed by Vanderbilt, but I found out there's a consortium of universities throughout the nation using that, so you guys may have those capabilities. And it far exceeds SurveyMonkey, so ask me later if you want to learn about REDCap. And then my quantitative analysis, I really looked at descriptive statistics, linear regression, Pearson correlation analysis, and mixed model analysis. And don't worry, I'm not going into all of that today. So what is the Baran EQI, and what did it measure? Well, there were 5 scales and then 15 subscales that I looked at among these supervisors. And I'm going to just talk to you about the branch managers, because with the commissioner and division directors, that's a really small number. So I'm not just going to highlight our commissioner's emotional intelligence, though he does have some. Anyway, it's very good. But anyway, the total emotional intelligence is one aspect: intrapersonal, interpersonal, stress management, adaptability, and general mood being those scales. And then the subscales fit actually within those scales. So for instance, self-regard, emotional self-awareness, assertiveness, independence, and self-actualization actually are part of the intrapersonal scale. And you can see the others go along: empathy, social responsibility. And these probably are some concepts that are pretty familiar, and you may not even realize they're related to emotional intelligence. The ones in red mean those are the ones I used when I did my correlation and mixed model analysis. And I'll talk a little bit about that later, but not too much again, not to worry. So, what did I find? Well, just in a descriptive way, just looking at the supervisors, I found that overall, the branch managers had an average or adequate level of emotional capacity, which is really encouraging. And the other piece of that that was maybe surprising, maybe not, they were high in terms of, these are all median scores. So if you can look, stress management overall, and for males and females, was in the high category, well-developed emotional capacity. So one of the questions that, you know, continue to be raised about that is, well, did they have that developed before they got into the role of a branch manager? Or is that something that the fact that they're still there surviving, they've developed the ability to deal with stress management? And you guys probably can relate maybe to some of that who are practitioners. So for conditions of trust, just on their own in terms of staff, this is a list of mean scores. And the possible score was a 5. So obviously, you know, the absolute mean would be 2.5. So you can see they're all above that mean. But the high ones are in blue and the low ones are in red, and this is going vertically. So overall, the highest perceptions, and the way this can be interpreted is, do you perceive that your supervisor is available? So in this case, overall, the staff perceived their supervisor to be available as one of the highest scores. The lowest that they, in terms of perception, but again, this was higher than just the average would be, is the perception of consistency and openness. And so that is, do you perceive your supervisor to be consistent? Do you perceive your supervisor to be open? And then in terms of males and females, for males, availability was again the high and the perception of openness was the low. And then among females, availability and the perception of competence for their supervisor was in the high, and then consistency was a little bit lower. But again, it shows overall there is some trust happening with these branch or these staff and their branch managers. And these conditions of trust are really, you know, some of those things that you go, oh yeah, I do trust somebody who's available, or when they're open, it helps me trust them more. And so I think it was a good measure to see how that worked and what that looked like. So when I combined all those things together, and I was so excited about what I was going to find, there's not a relationship in the overall sense between that branch manager's emotional intelligence and the staff's trust. So it was one of those things I'm like, you know, here I was hoping for all this grandiose results. And I'll talk about that a little bit at the very end. There may be some other questions, and we can have some dialogue about that. But there must be other factors related to overall trust. And there is still value in emotional intelligence, even though they may not be just related to each other. I did find, though, on a few of the other scales of trust, is that as total emotional intelligence of the supervisor increased, the perception that their supervisor was open did increase. So one of those measures of trust and emotional intelligence were related in the positive direction. Now, what's really interesting is as that emotional intelligence of the supervisor increased, the perception by the staff that the supervisor was available decreased. Okay. Anyway, things that make you go, So, a little bit about strengths and limitations, and you know, there's lots more to tell the story, but I'm going to keep it brief. This is the first study that has evaluated emotional intelligence, trust, and public health. It provided a potential prioritization of leadership competencies and future training opportunities. It is limited in generalizability because it's a non-randomized cross-sectional or one-time in the picture of realm study. And let me tell you, just after I did the study, which January through June is when I did the full study, or no, January through March, I finished in May. Anyway, the dates are running together. There were new furlough days and major cuts, and two division directors have just been eliminated. So it'd be interesting to see this again today. It's definitely different depending upon when you ask. It's also self-reported survey data. And it did not include organizational context or climate information, which always has an impact. Although everybody had an opportunity to participate, there are other things that may be happening within this that have a real impact on the trust of the staff. So, what are implications? Well, one is there may be an opportunity to tailor leadership training opportunities. You know, sometimes it's a one-size-fits-all that, ooh, let's all learn about emotional intelligence, or let's all work on availability, or let's all work on consistency. But some of the results showed that sometimes gender, which I showed a little bit, even age and years of service, which I didn't highlight here, but there were some differences in years of service and things like that that may need different kinds of training opportunities. It's not just a one-size-fits-all. And then also that leadership principles are really important independently, and they're foundations for a workforce to be considered. And obviously a lot of these leadership principles, as Lisa shared, are really having an impact on how the Center for Health Equity is able to move forward and what's going on with that. There's some core principles of trust, of emotional intelligence that's happening. And it does have an impact on recruitment, retention, and performance. You know, one of the pieces, especially of recruitment and retention of branch managers, if stress management is at that high level, and it's a highly stressful position, which all the branch managers I talked to, that's confirmed, that, you know, when thinking about who to bring up into those positions, what is their level of stress management, and how do we prepare people to get into that so that our workforce is fully prepared to be the best they can be in terms of public health. So thank you, you guys, many thanks to our wonderful commissioner, Dr. William Hacker, for letting me do this study. I asked him one day and he said, okay. So that was pretty amazing, the warmth and welcome to do that. Thank you to the Center of Excellence in Public Health Workforce Research and Policy at the University of Kentucky, who helped fund what I was doing today. And then my dissertation committee, now colleagues. Thank you guys.